The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
It's a war. Baby, this life, the things we endure. You said you saw the future, and it's an apocalypse. Who survives that? The lovers or the fighters? They sell us this lie that love's gonna save us. All it does is make us stupid and weak.
Thanks.
Look at me. Love isn't gonna save us. It's what we have to save. Pain makes us strong enough to do it. All our scars, our anger, our despair, it's armor. Baby, God loves the sinners best because our fire burns bright, bright, bright. Burn with me.
Happy heresies and welcome to the desert of the real. Welcome to Aeon Byte and apologies. We had a few tech archons, scheduling archons, but we are here. We have arrived. My name is Miguel Connor and I am your Pompidus of Gnosis. And I hope you enjoyed that introduction for those of you watching on video. And a little recap for those of you on audio because it's relevant today. In fact, the figure that we'll be discussing today might have to be added to that group. It might have to come to number one because our guest makes a very good case. But yes, the Gnostics were notorious for women leaders that were founders of their movements, gospels, spirituality. Some of them include Salome, disciple of Jesus. She appears in the Gospel of the Egyptians. She's the founder of the Carpocratian sect. Marcellina, founder of the Carpocratian Church in Rome, taught egalitarianism and swam in an ocean full of men in Rome. Helen, of course, the consort of Simon Magus, one of the 30 disciples of John the Baptist, priestess of the moon and founder of her own movement. Miriam, according to the Mandeans themselves, she is the founder of the Mandean religion, first century Jerusalem. Mary Magdalene, I don't have to say anything, leader, main disciple of Christ. Miriam, disciple of James the Just and founder of the Serpent Nassines. Mary the Jewish, one of the founders of Western alchemy. And we all know that alchemy and Gnosticism and Hermeticism started in the same area. But again, we're going to discuss another figure again, which is amazing. And for this, it is an honor to have back Marguerite Rigaglioso to discuss her new book, The Secret Life of Mother Mary. Welcome back, Marguerite, and great to have you.
Thank you so much, Miguel. That video montage gave me chills. It was so incredibly moving because I really have not heard of most of those people specifically, and that's very powerful.
Oh, well, thank you. And there's more. There's one I'm going to mention because your scholarship just like, oh my God, ideas were floating in my head, and we certainly want to discuss some of your insights that relate to what I've found. And with us too, we've got the Moondog Vance. Vance, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm fine. This is a topic that I especially love, the female aspects of spirituality. And, you know, it just occurred to me when I was watching the intro and so forth, that there's a plus side to the fact that women historically weren't involved in the worldly leadership, you know, the patriarchies, because they were free. to practice their spirituality outside the restrictions of dogma and religion. So that might explain why all the wonderful things that female spiritual people have contributed to the world.
Indeed, indeed. Good point. And we'll certainly share with this. So yes, Marguerite, it was great to have you back to discuss your last book, The Mystery Tradition of Miraculous Conception. So tell us, is this book for the audience, is this a sequel, an extension? It's also a very personal book too.
This, I would say, is the fruition of the previous book. That Mystery Tradition of Miraculous Conception was just telling us about Mother Mary as a divine birth priestess, going through her conception by her mother, her infancy, her upbringing, and how it is that she became this divine birth priestess. Now, this new book, The Secret Life of Mother Mary, is some of that, but everything else in her life, who she was, who she is, and who she shall be through all of us, essentially.
Indeed, yes. There's definitely a huge expansion because you go into so many more apocryphal texts, church traditions, and you, again, put it all together. And for the audience who might not be familiar, basically, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I don't want to be mansplaining, as they say, but basically, Mary was part of an ancient tradition of priestesses who employed paternogenesis, yes, with a complete discipline to be able to give birth through without a spouse. And they basically gave birth to women, and Mary sort of broke the mold and gave birth to a male, which means this figure would be a savior figure, an enlightened person. She lived at the temple. Her mother Anne practiced this. Yes. And the temple was just a place of discipline. Like you said, she danced, her feet couldn't touch the floor. I mean, basically, is that a decent recap or what am I?
Yes, very much so. Mm-hmm.
Okay, great, great. And this was based on the infant gospel of James, basically.
Yes, the infancy gospel of James, which originally was called The Birth of Mary. And there we go with scholars even disappearing the names of the women. Okay.
Exactly. So in this book, you start out with how Mary, well, you had a relationship with Mary. Sometimes you were trying to get away with her. Sometimes you were trying to, you know, you came to a different place. But how has Mary appeared in your life and helped your evolution?
Well, like a lot of people, I grew up Catholic. And Mary was just not a very appealing figure in what I was brought up with. She was sort of disappeared in the background, made to be very passive, an eternal virgin, good girl. It just wasn't a role model kind of energy for me. And so as the years progressed and I started, you know, I always had a mystical bent. So I started going into spirituality in my 20s. And as I started exploring this, I got led into the goddess movement. And that led me right into Mary Magdalene. And then that led me right into Mother Mary in a whole different way. And I began understanding her as a high priestess who achieved her ascension and became one with the goddess. And then, you know, over the last 10 years, I've been researching all these details of her life, which you can find in these suppressed gospels and so forth. And I put it all together. And meanwhile, I really did start developing a deep personal spiritual relationship with her, asking her to be my healer, my mother, and my spiritual mentor. And so that information is all wound into the book as well, because a lot of women, as it turns out, have been having these kinds of experiences and have been calling on Mother Mary. And I'm bowled over by the level of identification that a lot of readers are having with this. Come to find out, all these women around the world have been connected with her, whether they were brought up in a Christian tradition or not. It's extraordinary, Miguel, really.
It is, and it shouldn't be surprised. I mean, Marian apparitions have been just increasing in the 20th century. And then from the stories of Fatima, I mean, she's warning us and she's telling us it's time to evolve or transform or things are going to get rough. They're already getting rough. So yeah. Things are going to get worse. So we all need to transform. So as what is her, I'm sorry, were you going to say, I was going to say, what is her message for each woman, you would say?
Each woman is a unique student of a unique Mother Mary. She works individually with us according to our needs. That is how great she is. She's become fractalized into this amazing hologram who can do this because of all of her preparation and all of her spiritual lives, which had to do with learnings from India, you know, not just the little Middle East strip there. And so she works at whatever level we need her. Sometimes she approaches people and sometimes she comes to people who have called on her. So it's an amazing, amazing thing that's going on the planet. And that really always has, because even within the Christian traditions and that dogma, even many millions of people over the past, if not more, you know, over the past 2000 years have been calling on her. Right. Mm-hmm. And even within, you know, the Catholic skin that she's been given or that has been imposed on her. So she's been working in many, many ways, depending on where the person is in their life.
Exactly. And for the audience, you might as well say this now, you have meditation, prayers, and other things. You obviously have a program, so you can go about it as you wish. I mean, and for me, yes, I mean, I've been to Fatima many times, and the energy there is so spiritual. I advise people to go there. It will affect you. Obviously, somebody who's into the Gnostic thought, for me, Mary is just another wise disciple and Pistis Sophia. She, you know, she asks very deep, penetrating questions, and Jesus answers along with, you know, the rest of the apostles. So she is, my wife is Catholic. So of course, the Virgin Mary is very important in this house. So she is all there. And again, in my life, a positive thing. But in your book, you expand even more, because in your first book, you talk about, again, the history, her being the priestess in the Jerusalem temple, this ancient order. But in this one, she has even more, I don't want to say superpowers, you know, like superheroes, they find out new powers. We find out she has a lot of superpowers, right?
Yes, she does. And, you know, I think, Miguel, you're going to need to add to that ticker tape beginning, Mother Mary, first pope. Okay. She's the first one. She's the one who I discovered through these suppressed gospels about her life and these suppressed histories that were based on other now lost documents. She took over. She was the whole leader of the early movement that we would call whatever Christian Jesus movement. She was always with and advising and teaching Jesus as she raised him. She was very much a supporter of his work while he was alive. She had a parallel ministry going for the women. She was a teacher of Mary Magdalene. And then during the crucifixion, there's a whole drama that happened, according to my research, her role in the resurrection, which we can go into. And then after that, she was the full-on leader of both the men and the women who were following this movement and were leaders of this movement and taking the messages of love and all of those things out to the world. And she, for decades, she served this role until her own ascension, her own death passage at the end of her life. And she had many powers. She was not only a good teacher and a good mentor, she was a healer. Mm-hmm. She could heal afflictions. She could remove negative entities. She was an exorcist. She carried the myrrh and the myrrh incense. So we are really starting to believe now that she and these other women helped people enter the altered states of consciousness that were necessary for them to have these Gnostic or whatever you want to call it, mystery initiations. So there were many, many ways in which she was active. She was also a stepmother. Mm-hmm. And she was, you know, just this amazing being on the planet.
Yeah, for sure. And even when you talk about these things from India, it always struck me that Aristotle once said the Hebrews have learned everything from the Hindu Brahmins. And right. It always struck out. And I said, well, Aristotle's never wrong. He's rarely wrong. He wasn't just like, you know, drunk at a dinner table at a dinner party. You know, if he said it, there is evidence that.
And there apparently is evidence for Mother Mary, for Mary Magdalene and Jesus, all having gone back and forth to India at one time or another. That's remarkable because there were sadhus that had codes and information that they needed, even as elevated as they were on the earth. You still need memory triggers. You still need teachings to really help you open to your fullest level. And so they were always seeking those teachings.
Indeed. And yeah, because you talk about some of the abilities that Mary had, Siddhic powers, Bhadakaya Pravesh, bringing the dead back to life. And that's how she was able to get Jesus back, right?
That's right. That's right. They did two yogas while he was on the cross. One is called Atma Kandana Yoga. Mm-hmm. Again, this is from India, right? Where he knew how to take most of his soul essence out of his body while this was happening, leave a little bit in there. And then he also knew how to work time. He did some time magic while this was happening. And then both he and Mary, because they mastered all of the elements, earth, air, fire, water, ether, they knew how to bring a dead body back to life. That is Bhadakaya Pravesh. Jesus demonstrated it with Lazarus, and Mother Mary demonstrated it with Jesus. And so according to the late Hindu saint Sri Kaleshwar from India, who's written a book fascinating called The Real Life and Teachings of Jesus Christ and writes all about this. And I basically quote him extensively in The Secret Life of Mother Mary. And Sri Kaleshwar claims to have had past life memory of being with this holy family during this time. He says that Mother Mary was able to use her yogic practices, such as the mantras and all of the conceptual understanding she had, the power she had developed in her womb, not only to give divine birth to Jesus, but to divinely rebirth him at the time of his crucifixion through this mantric practice, through this Bhadakaya Pravesh practice, through working with his Atma Kandana practice. And she literally took him on her lap, like Michelangelo has sculpted it in the Pietà, and she was able to resurrect him. Now, Sri Kaleshwar says this was body and soul, and that Jesus actually went to India after that with Mary Magdalene. Whether you hold that or not, I tend to hold that she resurrected his soul. She like consolidated his soul back. He went on to the other plane, and then he continued on his ministry and teachings from there. Whatever timeline you want to adhere to, it was she and her womb that really accomplished this resurrection in tandem with Jesus' consciousness and what he was working at the time.
Makes sense. And yeah, I mean, you also talk about in your book, since we're on this talk, about the womb chakra. Could you explain what that is, Marguerite?
Exactly. That there is not just a second chakra in our body, but there's a womb chakra that basically incorporates just below the navel, you know, all the way downward in the pelvic region for the woman. And the man has an essence of it in this power point known as the Nada Bindu point in his own navel, under his own navel. And this holy womb chakra, which is, you know, the eighth chakra of the body, if you will, can be cleared, cleansed, cultivated, and empowered to do miracle level healings, and, you know, of the type that Mother Mary knew how to do, as well as all the way up to this level of resurrecting a body. So it really is an entire system that Sri Kaleshwar developed by collecting pieces of manuscripts from ancient palm leaves. And he had trunk loads of these. And he put it all together in what's called the Holy Womb Chakra System, I've learned this system. I've become certified to teach it. And it really is largely involving mantras, you know, the sacred chant prayers in Sanskrit, and the use of yantras or the sacred drawings or diagrams so that you can tune your mind, because they are representations of reality and you can work with reality through these two means. So he said that, you know, women were the most powerful masters on the planet, and that Mother Mary was the most powerful master who ever walked the planet, even more so than Jesus, because of what she had accomplished in not only the lifetime we know her as Mother Mary, but Sri Yukleshwar said she had many incarnations to get to this place.
Indeed, yeah, you even say in your book, the Steiner said that Isis and Mary were simply avatars of Sophia, the great
That's
mother.
Right. So, that's right. And that Mother Mary was a reincarnation of Isis. So yeah. She'd been going along in her lifetimes, perfecting until boom, she's Mother Mary. And then at her final ascension, she really becomes one with the goddess.
Yes. And I love how you were able to connect her ascension and her passing to the Gospel of Mary, because as many know, the Gospel of Mary, Mary talks about these levels and you got to fight these archons or get through. So right. It's the same. It's almost the same map, right? Or ritual.
In a way, except the difference is that because Mother Mary had like previously dealt with those energies, she didn't have to be, she didn't have tests at the thresholds. Mm-hmm. Mary Magdalene's document, which is wonderful, it's a roadmap for us in the Bardo, most right. of us. Is talking about, like you're saying, how we have to, oh my gosh, remember what is the password, you know, like you have to say, I am worthy for this passage. No, I am not wrath. I am not murder. I am not what everything you're telling me. Mother Mary had already cleared all that from herself. So she didn't go through those Bardo steps. She went into the higher heavens, but that said, she did see very, very negative realms. She didn't have to deal with it or go through them, but she witnessed it. And so, you know, this is part of the ascension. You're seeing the heaven and the hell of it all.
And this is documented, which is the book, just to be, is it the six books or?
The, yes.
That's the one books. That talks about her passing.
Okay. Yep. The six books is one of the Dormition narratives, the one that talks about this process, her ritual to cross over to the higher realms. And it was the translation I'm using is by Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T. He did a very fine translation in the late 1800s. And you see the exact stages and steps of what she sees, what she goes through. And when you understand it from a almost Tibetan monk perspective or a shamanic perspective, you realize, oh, this is not Catholic bunk. This is actually describing what a sacred holy person will see, go through, and experience, you know, as they're altering, as they're coming out of their body and they're moving into these higher dimensional realms.
Yeah, or Egyptian too. I mean, it's yes. all there. And something I wanted to bring up, and it's probably important. I had my Gnostic conference a few weeks ago, and I was lucky to have Diana Kelly, who you know.
Oh my God! Yeah, yes, she did. You're that guy. Okay, fabulous.
Yeah, that, and she did an incredible Sophianic ritual at the end, and put a when she put her hands on my head, the healing was just. I mean, she had the whole room of 50 people. Just this, the energy was incredible. But another guest, Ola Wolny, was talking about the power of women. And she said, look, Enola has not had children. And she says, it's not just that we can give life in this world, but on an ethereal plane, we are the creators. That's our gift. We can create virtually new worlds. And of course, the Kabbalah agrees, right? The Shekinah creates the framework and the world to let Yahweh go and play and move things and separate the light. But the woman can create complete worlds. And every human woman can do that on a different level, right?
Yes. And that's why purifying and empowering the holy womb chakra through these practices is so important, because that's the foundation that allows you to do it. This is not the mental erector set version of creation. This is the womb Shakta universe version of creation.
There you go. So yeah, so every woman has a destiny and again can create entire new worlds, and that's time you.
Yeah.
Take care of business. We need it.
Well, that's what's happening right now. and you know, no, seriously though, men do have a big role in that too. I mean, they have, like you're saying, their own creator type of imprint, and then women do, and then we also work together. But there is a largeness to the sacred feminine that almost like incorporates, like if you're going to see the universe as a yin yang, where it's feminine, masculine within, the whole enchilada is actually more toward the feminine valence. Like it is a female geometry. It's a female creator. So the female contains the male female within it. So it's kind of a paradox. And even Sri Kaleshwar, when he talks about the origin of the divinities and the universe and everything, there are three, there are several versions of the origin story in the Hindu tradition. And when you look at one, it looks like, oh, this is a male creator universe. And then you kind of dissect the names and everything. And you're like, no, it isn't. It comes right back down to the goddess. And then when you look at the Shakta feminine one, you dissect it down and it's like, no, it comes back down to the god. So they're all a kind of a moving, again, yin yang. And so we're really honoring, you know, both polarities here. The yin and the yang.
Yeah, very true. Again, Shekinah and Yahweh and so many other myths, Bar Below, the Great Spirit, Shiva and Shakti. This dance, and everybody has a role too. Well, I want to get into Mary Magdalene and her role from your research. And again, I was thinking, God, I wonder if what modern Gnostics will think, because you know, modern Gnostics have worked so hard to finally restore Mary Magdalene. It's taken decades to put her where she needs to be. And we always talk about her as an avatar of Sophia. She is that, but you start putting Mary as an avatar, and some might be, "Hey, you're moving into our territory. What's going on here?"
Well, we can say both and.
Yeah.
They both were. I think they both had things to learn from each other. I think that Mother Mary was the recognized senior elder of the entire group. That's fine because of what she had already accomplished in this lifetime, and she was already divinely born. Mary Magdalene was still kind of working it in this lifetime, but there's Gnostic evidence that she too achieved her ascension or some form. You know, Jesus says, "I am going to, you know, make you into the fullness of the fullness." In other words, hey, sister, you're going up to the Pleroma. You're on the elevator. But the human relationship between the Marys was, at least for a time, mentor, mentee, mother-in-law, daughter-in-law. But what I talk about in The Secret Life of Mother Mary is they really came to a kind of equality, because both of them and Mother Mary's sister always walked with Jesus. They were the three Marys. And we can also talk about why there are so many Marys or Mariamnes or Mariams, even in your opening montage.
You're mentioning the Gospel of Philip. Yeah, please tell us why so many Marys.
Title, you know. But anyway, I mean, it's both and. They were both probably teachers and learners with each other. And we do want to finally honor this queen of all queens, Mother Mary. That is an important piece, something that needs to be restored, right, to the throne now. Because without that, we can't quite get to her level. You see? Mm-hmm. So that it's important that we are able to see these beings in their largest form, because that's our roadmap.
Exactly. And I love also how you bring up the Gospel of Philip. You talk about how Sophia is called the barren one, but she's the mother of angels. You see that a lot.
All the dualities. Mother Mary was the virgin parthenogenetic priestess who was able to conceive divinely that way. She was that type of Sophia. And Mary Magdalene was the tantric priestess who would have an actual physical union and would conceive divinely that way. you have a virgin conception and you have a tantric conception. They were both at two ends of that continuum, both Sophias. There's no contradiction. Sophia tells us this herself. I'm the whore and the holy one. I'm the first and the last. Right. I'm the barren one and the mother. I'm this and that. All seeming opposites come together in her. So there's no duality here.
Very well. Yeah. Quoting Thunder, Perfect Mind. We recently did a show. And of course, as you talk in your book, the Valentini, they always talked about there's a higher Sophia and then there's a lower one, the Akamoth, the more earthy darkness priestess. Where do you think Mary Magdalene came from? Do you think she was in the Jerusalem temple, or was she perhaps a foreigner? Or I've always wondered.
Well, I think she was in the milieu. I mean, this is something I'd more like have to like go into channeling in a cannabis state or something. I mean, I can try to tune in. I think she would be more in the Essene type of grouping. Mm-hmm. And they were kind of Jews, but sort of not really. You know what I mean? Like, there were so many Jewish groups. I mean, I'm reading this.
Judaism was very fluid.
It was very fluid. Talk about fluidity. Holy crap. Mysteries of the Bridal Chamber, of the Bride Chamber by Victoria LaPage, really lays this all out. I don't know if you know this book, but William Henry turned me onto it. And it is phenomenal because it affirms the intuition that I had when I was reading, for example, the Infancy Gospel of James, all about Mother Mary. And I'm like, this is seeming to talk about a very different type of Judaism, which is, of course, why then it gets totally dissed as being not real, not telling us anything authentic. Right. But when you read Victoria LaPage, you realize, oh, wow, these people were doing all sorts of things. They had all sorts of temples. There was this group and that group. And I think, again, Mary Magdalene was in that milieu. You know, the Jacobe de Voragini biography about her says that she, Lazarus, and Martha were all related. They all had money. They owned large tracts of land. Whether they were Jewish per se, or what house they would have belonged in, or whether they were part of these other kinds of people, I think it's more that. I mean, she was just so esoteric. She's not going to be a Maccabean, Levitical, you know what I mean? I'm going kosher type person, you know, like she, that's not her. She's like, give me the myrrh and let me open my consciousness to the higher
dimension
of reality. I need to know. I want to know what that pleroma is. I want to go there.
Exactly. Exactly. And here's an insight I wanted to share with you. In the Gospel of Barnabas, you talk about she's out there, and you know, and Peter, and she says something and then stops herself, and she stops fire from coming from her mouth. And then there's, that's what happens, right?
Yeah, this is the Gospel of Bartholomew.
Oh, Bartholomew, sorry, I'm getting it.
The male apostles say, hey, Mother Mary, how'd you actually conceive that Jesus? And she's like, if I told you, fire would issue from her, from my, or the world would disintegrate. But she tells them anyway. And she sets herself up. I mean, I describe it in The Secret Life of Mother Mary, how they have to hold her physically. Mm-hmm. And that it is like almost a breach in dimensionality or the reality stream. And things, there are phenomena that happen. And Jesus kind of comes in on this and has to put everything a little bit back together for the 3D world to continue functioning. So she was really telling people that there was such a huge mystery to how she did conceive Jesus, that it's layers upon layers. It's working in multiple dimensions. It's at the quantum physics level.
Yeah, and even in the Gospel of Thomas, Jesus says, if I tell you my mysteries, fire will come from the ground and destroy you. And Jesus says, I have come to cast fire on the world.
Yeah, you know, people can be not ready, especially if they haven't had the right initiations and if they haven't had the right medicines to get initiated and to be able to see in multidimensional ways. It can be either they'll miss it entirely. They won't even be able to understand or see what is being said or hear it, or they'll be traumatized.
Yep.
And that's what we've got today. both things happening.
Yeah. And there's the other part too. I don't know if it's in the six books. You talk about she was doing her ritual. And again, there were people on her side and people that wanted to, you know, thought it was false, and they were charging the house and fire was protecting her. I wanted to bring the point about fire breathing. And there's a figure in the Gnostic Gospels, the hypostasis of the Archons, called Noria, and she's Seth's younger sister. And then there's a book called The Book of Noria that's lost. There's a prayer of Noria. But when she goes to the ark and Noah won't let her in, she breathes fire on the ark and it destroys her. So I had that. There must be some tradition. And also ancient texts, even the Kabbalah, is always associated with a fire breather, with a destroyer. Yes. So I think there might be some tradition with this fire from the mouth that connects Noria and Mary.
Absolutely. You see it quite a bit. I was even in a group in the Bay Area. We called ourselves the Fire Breathers because Christina Donnell was teaching this fire breathing process. It's just, a means of breathing, and it does things in the body. It gives you powers, whatever it does. So it may be partly, and really what it's describing is an energy. Mm-hmm. Whether literal fire can come out of the mouth, probably, the Moses people. I mean, people who are at that level. But it's describing acidic power that they develop within their own body to repel things that need to be repelled when needed, like a mob coming to try to burn Mother Mary's body so she cannot have a full rainbow body experience. No. That's not going to happen. And that's what I describe in The Secret Life of Mother Mary.
Yes. So the connections are amazing. And for the audience, if you have any questions, please super chat them so we can separate them and Vance can get to them. As always, please subscribe to the show. The book is out from Inner Traditions. They're also doing the Elvis book. So I want to always plug Inner Traditions. They've been publishing occult and esoteric books since 1975. They specialize in books, ebooks, audiobooks, card decks, and other products that convey the spiritual, cultural, and mythical traditions of the world. The Inner Tradition imprint focuses on esoteric knowledge, occult wisdom, and perennial philosophy. The mission of Inner Traditions is to rediscover, preserve, and protect the esoteric and spiritual traditions of the world. So please go to innertraditions.com. They were a sponsor of Astronosis, the event, and they're always so helpful. So we want to mention them. But now I want to bring in Vance. Vance, do you have a question or remark for Marguerite?
Yeah, I'll lead in with the third secret of Fatima. What can you tell us about the third secret of Fatima?
Wow. You know, Marguerite would have gotten into ceremonial space if you were going to be asking these esoteric questions that need channeling to understand. Let me just tune in and see whatever I'm receiving. But first, I want to say Inner Traditions, so grateful to them. Both this and the secret life of Mother Mary and the Mystery Tradition of Miraculous Conception, they have been a dream to work with. I am so grateful that they have their now, however many imprints they have, 8, I don't know. I'm with the Bear and Company imprint. They're wonderful to work with. They are producing tremendous material. I highly, ask people to buy the books directly, from the Inner Traditions website, bypass all these other secondary markets. Okay, so the third message of Fatima, right, that the church wouldn't allow it to be said. What I get when I sense into it right now, I've never really done that, is that it was a little bit inconvenient for the church, whatever came through. And they're like, we don't exactly know how to handle this. We can't exactly spin it, in the way. Because these apparitions, first of all, they're pinned as being Mother Mary, but they are the stream of Sophia that Mother Mary is from. And people will just identify it with how they perceive it already, but they'll start putting all this dogma on who Mary of Fatima and who Mary of Lourdes is, and, you know, all this stuff and what the kids were saying and trying to twist and turn it. So I'm guessing that it was a message. Wouldn't it be funny if it was a message that was like, well, the Vatican should be dismantled.
Turn off the lights.
Yeah. You know, I think it was something that they didn't quite know how to deal with. And it might have been wrapped around a kind of a warning. But, Mother Mary, the way I understand her, her warnings are loving. They're not Armageddonish, so to speak. In other words, she's always showing you a way. So I don't know that it would have been anything like horrible, like the world's going to blow up. You know, I just suspect that it was kind of a complex message that they couldn't exactly spin the way they wanted to. And they decided to leave it. That's my intuition about it. Okay. How's that?
That's a good take on it. Yeah. I've always suspected that it was an indictment of the church as it's incarnated today. Right.
Right. So what, like I'm saying,
like, yeah. Father Malachi Martin used to talk about, if you remember Father Malachi Martin.
I didn't know him.
You ought to pick up. He's written some books about the internals of the Vatican and so forth.
Oh, la, la, la.
So
maybe she said, stop child pedophiling or whatever.
That would be good advice.
Right? Something embarrassing. Okay.
The other thing I was going to ask you about is over time, you know, there are all the different apparitions, and so throughout history, we've had Isis and other, and Sophia and, you know, Mother Mary, Mary Magdalene. Do you think there's some sort of unity between? Is there another super ultra dimensional being exactly in back of all these?
Exactly what I'm saying. Like Bernadette Soubirous of Lourdes called her the White Lady. Mm. She didn't call her Mother Mary until it got put on it. These female apparitions are part of the Sophianic dragon lineage that's also connected with the interdimensional realms of the Fae here on the Earth. They're connected with High Pleroma and, you know, Middle Earth. I mean, it's the same stream, which is why all the Marys are named Mary, because they are part of the same feminine healing, mentoring, awakening, priestesshood energy that is here for humanity. So very much all connected.
I see.
Right?
Interesting. Yeah, that I was going to ask you about why, you know, for example, you know, the apparition at Lourdes was not specifically identified as Mary, and you know, you just answered that.
Yeah, because it is Mary. It isn't Mary. It's this is a bigger thing. And that's what I'm starting to realize as I'm teaching. You know, I have my Mary and Magdalene priestess training that's starting as of this filming on September 10th, 2024. Oh, wow. And I've got 62 women from 6 continents enrolled in this. And we're still doing it up to the last minute if people hear about it. but, you know, it's all about, what does it mean to walk as a Mary? What does it mean to walk as a Magdalene? It's entering this stream that is already within us and just turning it on and understanding, what do we want to emphasize as a part of this walk? What qualities, you know, what healing do we need to do? Where are we going with this? How are we awakening our consciousness, and how are we helping the planet with this? That's what this is all about. That's what I believe these Marys and these Magdalenes were always all about. And they've come numerous times. The timeline in which we know them as the Sacred Family, if you will, is just one of their incarnations. they were again tumbling in and in and in and in. And now they're here as a collective. There's so many women who identify with Magdalene and as Magdalene. Mm-hmm. Now, so many women who are identifying with Mary, with, you know, as Mary. This is the second coming.
Very true. And again, there's so many others, Ellen, the concert of Simon Magus, Marceline. There's a whole bunch that have been just forgotten.
Yes. Mystery women. And it's so important to resurrect their names like you were doing at the beginning. I could just cry. I know I found these other names, the priestesses that were around Mother Mary, Nesra, Tabitha, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, when do we hear these names? Oh my gosh.
You say Mary had a sister, right?
She did. She had a mm-hmm. sister, Mary, also named Mary. Why? Because she was part of this priestess dream. It's not because her mother couldn't think of another name. She actually was born. Apparently, Parugita was her name, little hen. But she became Mary. And so she joined this priestesshood with her half-sister because she was born at a different time by Anne or Hannah, their mother. Hannah gave birth to Mother Mary parthenogenetically, just like Mother Mary gave birth to Jesus. That's a story we don't hear, but it's in the Infancy Gospel of James. And I talk about it in the Mystery Tradition of Miraculous Conception. Okay. These are things that are in plain sight, but that nobody's really quite paid attention to or put it all together.
Exactly. Yeah. And also it should be mentioned that the shepherds at Fatima, Lucy, they didn't ever said it was the Virgin Mary. It was just a lady, I think, in a white That's dress. Right. Same with Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Yeah.
I forgot Don Diego, what his name, just saw a lady. Yeah. And he thought at first it was like an Aztec goddess manifest. But, you know, then later cultural trappings get put together. But like you said, it's both. It's nothing.
It's both.
Of course.
Yeah, it's both. And, you know, what I'm helping to do is release some of these cultural trappings so that we can see the essential light body of this being again, and the stream that she's part of, which is in all of us, whatever our sex, by the way.
Indeed. And what about, we're talking about this force to enlighten human beings. Do you see a force of darkness like the Gnostics do, or do you think it's just humans being controlling and manipulative? What do you think?
No, I see it because I've lived it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we've all lived it. Anyone who has trauma has lived the archons. And that's most of us. Because this is a plague on humanity. And it is written in those Gnostic Gospels from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Get that book by Marvin Meyer, The Gnostic Bible, and read it through, and it's all in there. Thank goodness those documents were saved and found, because these people who came 2,000 years ago were dealing with the same issues that we're dealing with today, and they're like, wow, this is a big job. Who's getting crucified? Who's getting martyred? You know, they were like, wow. And, yeah, these forces are working. They're working it. But the thing is, what this sacred family is teaching us to do is to raise our love and light vibration so that we're just above it. Hmm. We don't even have to deal with that stuff anymore.
And you call it the rainbow body? Is that?
Well, the rainbow body is particularly what can happen when you're leaving your body after your death.
Hmm.
You know, when your soul is leaving your body. Jesus went rainbow body, you know, if we're going to adhere to the idea that Mother Mary helped to resurrect him. But in my belief structure, he left his body. He took his body with him, essentially. It's like, you know, and Mother Mary, I talk about that in The Secret Life of Mother Mary. Same thing. Lights were seen in the sky and all they could find were her linen garments in her tomb. That is something that is commonly described among very high level adepts, monks, and so forth, as the rainbow body phenomenon, where rainbow lights are seen when the monk passes out of his body and the body shrivels and shrivels away until there's only hair and nails. Now with Mother Mary, it wasn't even, she took everything. Mm. That's how high and adept she was.
Yeah, indeed. But what do you teach in your course? And let me frame it this way. Yes, there is the journey after we leave, and the Egyptians, the Tibetans talk about it, but the Gnostics were like, we ain't going to wait till we die. We want to take these astral flights that are exactly, and then come back.
Like, it's not, yeah, that's right. It's not just about at the hour of our death. It's about living now from a higher dimensional perspective and restoring Eden, new earth, okay? Mm-hmm. That's the whole point here. So that's what my training is all about, is to give people another rung of the spiral of tools and techniques for living and cultivating their love light body now, to shift their lives now, to become powerful healers and workers. And, you know, I'm doing it through the lens, the prism of the Marys, and what we know about them from the Gnostic sources and from our own inner sourcing of them, our own inner conversations.
And I'm sure many who come to you want to know about the extraterrestrial angle, and I'm sure you can tie it in. I mean, Fatima, yeah, some have said, was like the biggest extraterrestrial visitation, yeah, the circle and all that. And it happens in history, like Teresa de Avila. Most, yeah, people, you see paintings of little angels and she's going through her ecstasy, but she always described them as orbs, you know, and, yeah, this could be spirits, this could be aliens, but you can work it where it works with extraterrestrials, right?
Yes, because first of all, Mother Mary is part of the stream of the Pleiades, the seven sisters of the Pleiades, who are the seven starseed mothers of human DNA, our skin, right, our bones. She's the eighth Pleiadian sister is what I've received in my oracle ceremonies, bringing in Jesus, where these others brought in other beings and seeded the human race. And then all that DNA went around. So we all have Pleiadian DNA. We all could have Jesus Magdalene DNA at this point. We don't know how far their lines have crossed. So if you look at it that way, you could say, all right, part of the Pleiadian mission, those are the positive ETs that have come to humanity. There's positive ETs in Andromeda and Sirius, even in Orion, but there's also negative energies that are going on. And some of these experimentations that have been on humans with the little beings that, you know, are drawn. And it's a really wide universe. There's so much going on. And these beings know all about it. Mother Mary is now one with Mother Divine. So she sees it all. This is all under her skirt, the gray aliens, as much as, you know, the high, tall, whatever, Nordics or the Pleiadians. Okay. So what they're focused on, though, is like, okay, let's get these human people back into their angelic form because they were robbed. That's what they're all about. And that's what the Gnostics talk about. It's the same mission now as then, but new rung of a spiral, because a heck of a lot more people in the world now are open on the levels that we're talking about and can have access than back then when it was little enclaves and, you know, so forth. Now, for all we know, I should take that back, because like it's not always an evolution up. I mean, a lot of those indigenous peoples knew perfectly well, and they were very much connected with the mystery realm. So I don't want to make it look like, oh, they were so primitive back then. But what we're doing is we're just trying to restore the essence of our angelic nature.
Yeah, I certainly would agree that it's so necessary. And just to recap, Mary is a title, again, we talked about this before, a virgin has nothing to do with your personal life. It's a woman who's complete, is full of power. Isis was called a virgin. Yeah, that's it, sovereign. So that's it. But you also mentioned fairies. Real quick, fairies, what would you say are fairies? You also have wonderful section on the unicorn and Mary, which is...
Yes, that's a whole other thing. I really encourage people to read the book, because what I'm talking about is the realm of fifth dimensional reality, which is Mother Mary's realm. She dwells in nature. That's why all the flowers were named after her or her life events in the ancient medieval European world, you know. She's very much connected with that realm of energy. The fairies, the she, various names that they're given. The unicorns are part of that Edenic realm. They are like the dragons, but they're close. They're very close to the earth plane. Many, many stories about them. And I talk about this in, you know, one of the last chapters of the book, really resurrecting the unicorns now and what this is all about and how it's connected with sacred holy women.
Very true indeed. Yes. Yeah. You have to read it, people. It's all there. And I know we probably should wrap it up in the next 5 minutes. I know you have somewhere to go, but Vance, do you have any questions from you or the audience? I think the audience has there's some good spirited talks and everything, but no questions.
Yeah, I don't see any either, but I was wondering, have you heard of any modern era miracles from India, such as, Mother Mary and Jesus learned from the masters back there?
I've heard of one woman. She's a Hindu saint, and I call her a saint, a holy woman named Divine Amma, not Amachi. Divine Amma, and she is or was or I don't know, married to a Swami. And she claims that she divinely conceived her daughter, who's now in her 20s, going on 30s, for example. And I'm sure there are many, many. Sri Kaleshwar manifested many miracles. I'm sure there are many, many other male and female saints who have done and are doing and will be doing Siddhic miraculous activities on the planet. Okay.
We never hear of these things in the media, of course, because it's oriented towards the material and,
Our job is not to educate us, Vance.
No, Carl Sagan. No, it's impossible. This type of thing.
Oh yeah. And even if they did put it on TV, they twist it in some way. So better that it doesn't actually make it onto there. the people who are doing this really work, it's better sometimes behind the scenes, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, even at the conference, we were all talking like, how come nobody's ever done a movie on H.P. Blavatsky? I mean, that woman changed history, created a global religion. And I was like, well, Kathy Bates should play her, at least
older. Oh, absolutely.
But they won't make a movie about her, because even though she was a pivotal figure in human history.
No, it's for the same reason that we don't hear of the women that you showed at the beginning of this video, It's still an archonic yang show on planet Earth, all right? Now, I'm not even going to say male, men. They've infiltrated everyone, and it's all been twisted toward the yang, and we're trying to return it into the balance with the feminine, because we have to return to our mother.
Yeah, you got to go back. You got to go back to Tiamat and get into the waters of chaos.
That's right. That's right. Have your initiation and be held in the womb of the mother.
Yeah, and die and be reborn. That's right. That's it. That's
die,
a formula.
Die and be reborn. There are many ways to have that kind of experience while you are living.
Yeah, I mean, the Gospel of Philip just says those who think we have to wait to die to resurrect are in error. You must resurrect while still in the flesh, right there.
That's so true, I believe.
And I agree, yes. And for the audience, she has a wonderful Hail Mary prayer in her book, which is beautiful. The meditations, just the book will help you and give you a new perspective. But tell the audience, Marguerite, about your program and your website, The Seven Sisters, and what can they expect?
Yes, sure. And yes, the meditations you're referring to are freely available through the book. There's a link. They just have to go in and sign up for it. And there's a meditation that accompanies each chapter, and people are saying how deep they are, but I'm the founder of Seven Sisters Mystery School. sevensistersmysteryschool.com. And I founded that in 2012, and it's been going strong. I have many free offerings and on-demand offerings on my website. You can join our email list to be informed of what we're doing. As I said, we are presently enrolling in the last days, the Mary and Magdalene Priestess Training. And I always have things coming up. I do online and in-person cacao ceremonies, and I have a retreat in the New York area the October 11, 2024 weekend, working with the Marys, the love vibration through cacao, which is one of those mind and heart opening superfoods. And so we will be experiencing, you know, greater happiness and resilience and a new love set point through that. So there are many, many things in addition to the books that I've written and so forth. But go to sevensistersmysteryschool.com, S-E-V-E-N, written out, and just take a look and have fun.
Yes. And for the audience, of course, it's on the show notes right now. It will be on the show notes when you listen on audio. And check it out. Yeah, cacao, it must be up and coming. Remember, we had Gemma last week, Vance, and she was talking about her ritual. So good to see those plants coming up. And I'm sure Marguerite Mary used herbs and stuff for healing too,
right? I feel very strongly, and I talk about that in the book. And myrrh or some compound of it or with it was one of the major, you know, mind expanders that they used, these priestesses.
Yeah, no doubt, yeah. No doubt about it. Well, awesome. This has been a great conversation for an important topic because, again, we're rounding the whole Gnostic ideology and bringing it to life. And it will make a difference in people's, in their existences. It will bring individuation. So, very excited. But I guess first, Vance, thanks for keeping us company.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, Marguerite. It's been a pleasure meeting you here on iambite Gnostic Radio.
Thank you so much. And thank you, Miguel. What an amazing thing you're doing with this show, your conferences, and all the other things you're doing. Thank you.
Just for spreading light.
Mysteries to life.
Well, you would say too, we all have a purpose. We all can be healers, magicians, broadcasters of the truth. Nobody is better than anybody.
No. We each have our unique universe to bring forth. That's how I see it.
That's it. We got to give it birth. We got to give it, bring it out. What does the Gospel of Thomas say? If you bring forth what is within you, it will save you. If you do not bring forth what is within you, it will kill you. It's a simple formula that Thomas says. So.
Blessed be. I know it's such a truth.
So everybody out there, bring it out. Bring forth what is within you, and you will make a better world. I don't know if your life's going to get easier because they will come after you, but you'll be fine. You will stand your ground.
Above the fray. That's
exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Well, Marguerite, as always, thank you very much. For the audience, thanks for being here on this Freya Day. Warrior Goddess. And yes, we got some shows next week. Very excited, but they will come. And everybody, yes, please have a good rest of your weekend and keep writing your own gospel, living your own myth. Thank you.
Take care, everybody.